Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today we are previewing the Kansas versus Kansas State matchup that's happening in Manhattan this weekend. We're also going to talk just a little bit about the rest of the Big 12 slate that's happening. And to do that, I have coming back to the podcast, Ryan Gilbert of the 10 of 12 podcast. Ryan, how you doing tonight?
Doing good. How are you? Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I figured... it's kind of funny because I don't think I've had the same guest on to talk about K-State twice, and I'm trying to remember if the last time I had you on, if it was specifically about the K-State game. I seem to think it was more about the Big 12 in general.
But, yeah, I think it was just Big 12.
Well, then I guess my streak is still alive in terms of
here we go.
Not having the same guest on twice to talk about a K-State game. So obviously that's going to be the main topic that we're going to start with. I do want to kind of talk about the rest of the slate because I think that there's at least a few intriguing matchups coming up. But to start, kind of looking at this Kansas versus Kansas State, are you expecting anything from this game? Like, are you expecting it to be a good game, entertaining at all, or is it pretty much going to be a blowout?
I've got no expectations, really. Excuse me. I mean, my heart wants to tell me to cheer. I mean, I'll be cheering for K-State, but to convince me that they have a chance to win, I just don't see it happening. I mean, they have lost, I think, seven or eight in a row now. It's been ugly here, and obviously the way Kansas is playing, I don't think we stand much of a chance. But, I mean, whenever we play KU here in Manhattan, I always feel like there is a chance just because, you know, you go back to 2014 and then 2015 as well. It's just that 2015 team was terrible, and they still somehow beat KU. So I think there's a slight chance, but KU's going to be ready for this one. I really – and not expecting a whole lot. I'm keeping an eye on the, the fights, the altercation, something like that could happen. I'll be announcing it for my student station. So keeping an eye on that's what I'm most excited for.
Yeah, and I would say this isn't going to be like, when Kansas goes to Oklahoma State where nothing's really on the line and, you know, they're kind of just trying to finish out the season without anyone getting injured. That, you know, Kansas does need to win this game to make sure that they, you know, stay tied with Baylor. So there's going to be a very hungry, very motivated team that's going to be out there doing that. So I'm not really that concerned about Kansas overlooking this game. Plus, you know, the whole intrigue from the fight last time, I don't think that Kansas is going to overlook it because of that as well. Bill Self is going to be really focused to make sure that they are paying attention to basketball, only really worrying about basketball and not getting into any extracurricular activities. So it's going to be interesting, I think. I think there's definitely a good chance just because Kansas gets started slow for K-State to stay in it, at least for the first half. But I would not be surprised to see at the end of the half, Kansas goes on a big, 15-2 run or something like that to really put the game out of reach and then just kind of holds it in the second half until they go on another big run when Kansas State kind of just loses any momentum that they might have had at that point. But in terms of – so then what are you looking for in this game? Is there anything that Kansas State's working on that you're hoping to kind of see them get better at? Any particular players you're looking to develop? What is the draw for someone who is going to be watching this game other than they just have to watch every game that their team plays?
I'm going to keep an eye on Cartier Jada. I don't know how much you have talked about or even followed his situation. The expectations were very high coming into this year. He was supposed to be the leader, and it just hasn't worked out. I'm sure you heard Fran Fraschilla call him out on national TV, and then him and Bruce Weber getting into the fight with the stool. I'm watching him in this game. Over the last couple of games, I think his body language has been good. He's giving his effort. He's with the team now. Will he be with us next year? I don't think so, but we'll see. But keeping an eye on him and his effort, how he plays, not taking over the game, not being a ball hog. He's literally been a ball hog sometimes this year. It's really been frustrating for me to watch. I've been pleased with the way he's been performing as of late, but overall, it's just been a mess of a season. But I think Bruce Weber, you know, the way he's handled that situation, I don't think has been well either. I think you've got to let him go. I don't think Bruce Weber is – he's not going to be just boom, you're gone. He wants to keep players around for as long as he can. But keeping an eye on Cartier, to answer your question, is the one that I would have to watch for. And you talked about slow starts. I mean, I think K-State's going to come out and they're just going to crap the bed here. I mean, you look at most of K-State's games, not only in the conference, but around the whole season, they have had slow starts. And you look back at that game versus Baylor last night, and Baylor was just, they were ready to win, and they were not on cruise control like we've seen sometimes this year. They were ready, they were prepared. I think KU, it's going to be the same exact story for the Jayhawks on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about Jara and, you know, kind of that slow start there, but I'm curious about some of the other guys that are on this team, you know, in terms of, I mean, obviously Maywayne and Snead are gone because they're seniors, you know, but there's not really any other seniors that are in the rotation. You know, so in terms of like development, Antonio Gordon obviously has kind of had some issues with temperament and kind of, you know, keeping his temper under control. But you have to think, I mean, he is at least decently talented and seems to be kind of one of those guys that they might be expecting to step up next year. Do you think that that's a possibility, or has he been having enough issues this year that maybe he's not going to be able to kind of build on that for next year?
I think he's just too nervous when he's on the court. And like you said, he's had multiple issues with getting into it with other players, but he kind of reminds me of a guy like Shane Southwell, the same body type, the same kind of shot, you know, mid-range. I think Bruce Weber wants him to kind of replicate that game of Shane Southwell, but I'm not a big fan of Antonio Gordon. I think the face of the program, you know, on the billboards, on the posters, on whatever, in 3 years from now, I think it's going to be Montavious Murphy and Dejuan Gordon. Montavious has been banged up all year. He missed the majority of the non-con. He's missed the last couple games. He missed the game versus Baylor and then the game here in Manhattan versus Texas on Saturday. So keeping an eye on his status is, I mean, it's not going to really matter, but I'm interested to see if he can come back, how he can play. And Dejuan Gordon, I think he's been playing more confidently as of late, but it's just, it's not all there. You need to see him stepping into his shots and being confident. When I'm on the court, I'm going to go make a play. You look at Christian Brown. I know he hasn't gotten as many minutes over the last couple of games as he was in maybe, say, late January, but that's a dude who's confident. He's not afraid to take a shot. Bill Self is giving him the green light because he's a good player. Dejuan Gordon and Montavious and Antonio, they just haven't found that confidence yet. They're good players. There's a reason they're here at a Power 5 school. They just haven't really found it yet. And going on to, you know, Xavier Snead, McCall Maywayne leaving this team, this is all we got. These three freshmen, I mean, maybe Mike McGurl can give us – I mean, he'll be our only senior that can – I mean, maybe Levi Stockard as well. But, boy, this year's freshman class, and I know next year's class looks good as well, but this year's class is really going to be the face of the program for the next 3 years. And, you know, and there's not going to be much besides them, because I think Cartier is going to leave as well. It's going to be another down year next year. I'm sad to say that, but keeping an eye on those three freshmen. I don't think Antonio, I think he's probably ranked number three as far as those three freshmen go. I'd probably put Dejuan at one and then Montavious at the number two. I think I read that Dejuan was like the sixth highest recruit that we have ever had ever here at K-State for basketball, which he's definitely not lived up to those expectations. But obviously, I think he's lacked a leader to look up to. Xavier Snead's got his mind on the NBA. And then we've talked about Cardi. He's just got no one to look up to right now. I think he's going to become a leader, but it's going to take some time. And if I'm Bruce Weber this season, I'm rolling with those three freshmen. I'm really not going to – obviously, you've got to play your best players a little bit, but, man, you got to just get them prepared, you know, for the future. If it's baseball, you can't just play your minor league players because no one's going to watch the game. No one's going to follow your team, but it would still help you out in the future. So getting, you know, David Sloan, someone we haven't talked about yet here, he'll be back next year, the junior college transfer. Keeping an eye on him. He's been, a lot of K-State fans love him, but he's very turnover prone. Bruce Weber is not satisfied with his defensive efforts, but he's still probably our best pure point guard on this team. So keeping an eye on pretty much every player, I guess there's an answer for that. But I really, to give you one answer, it'd be Dejuan Gordon, just seeing how confident, you know, he can play in this game on Saturday.
Yeah, and I guess that kind of shows how much, you know, I've actually been following this Kansas State team, because you're right. I probably should have realized that it was the other Gordon in Dejuan who is probably much more likely to kind of take that role next year. You know, I've heard speculation. Well, you know, you kind of have to wonder, just with everything going on, it's not like they can really afford to get rid of a guy like Antonio Gordon. But if he has another incident, because, you know, the brawl against Kansas, from what I understand, and full disclosure, we were both on the 10-12 podcast earlier this week, kind of talking about this as well. But, you know, that wasn't his only incident of the year in terms of, like, going after someone. And it's just the only one I think that most people actually know about, unless they're following this team closely. And so, you know, I have to think if he has another incident, especially this year, there's a good chance that he might be suspended by the school for some sort of amount of time, just because, I mean, it seems to keep happening, or it's at least going to reflect really poorly on Bruce Weber, which I think leads me into my next question is, you know, Weber's had the incident with Jara just recently. You know, there's the way that all of that was handled after the brawl, like kind of everything that's been going on, and just the fact that he hasn't really gotten much out of this team this year. I realize it's kind of difficult to move on, you know, from a guy like Weber, especially when you are trying to kind of rebuild this, and he's had some recent success. But how much of a hot seat is he actually on at this point? Or is that kind of just, you know, people putting unrealistic expectations onto the program?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I mean, you go back to last year, he wins the Big 12. I think it's too soon to put him on the hot seat. If something like this happens next year, then I think you can legitimately talk about that. But next year, if they struggle, but they're still growing, they're looking good, there's no issues that happen off the court, I think he's fine. If something happens with Dejuan or Antonio, which I honestly think something will happen with Antonio, Montavious or Mike, any of these guys here, something off the court happens, then I think he is on the hot seat. But if he can just play, you know, win 5 or 6 games in the Big 12 and compete in most of them and just kind of stay out of the negative media attention, whatever you want to call that, I think he'll be okay. But, you know, as for Antonio Gordon, man, I even said this on my podcast, like, he needs to go. He should not be here at K-State. He's not good enough to even play at a Power 5 school, in my opinion. And of course, his off the court issues and on the court issues for that matter. I would let him go. And we've got, I don't have the numbers, but we're currently one over limit right now. So we've got 5 players that are leaving. Shaw Neil Williams already left, so it's 4. And then we have 4 players coming in. And then we already had one guy who I don't even know his name come in over winter break, so it's at 3. So right now, someone's got to go. And Bruce Weber has even said that he wants to bring in maybe 1 or 2 more guards to this team next year. So we could see 2 or 3 players leave from this team. I think James Love and Nigel Shad will be gone. That third person, man, I mean, obviously Cartier, Antonio, the third person is going to be a very impactful player that does leave this team next year. I would not be surprised if one of those, if not both, leave the team.
Well, I mean, and kind of what we were talking about, Antonio Gordon, like if they have to get rid of someone and they have to push someone out, that sounds like he's probably the guy you're going to try to push out, because, you know, he hasn't lived up, I think, to expectations with his play on the court. He's kind of playing more because he has to than because he's really kind of pushing to get on the court. And two, he's had discipline issues. And, you know, you can't really have guys like that around that. Like when guys like Marcus Foster, you know, were speaking out or having discipline issues, you kind of put up with it a little bit because he was playing on the court the way you needed to be able to kind of get away with that. Somewhat. Gordon is not doing that right now. And so if he keeps it up, if, you know, if he doesn't have a huge attitude change or they don't figure something out with him, you know, there's a very good chance he's the guy that gets pushed out, just because they don't want to have that kind of, you know, influence in the program, especially for the new recruiting classes coming in. So, yeah, I mean, I guess looking at it from the outside, you know, it's kind of hard to see how Weber is able to kind of stick around for so long. I think this is probably the second time where he, you know, it's completely fallen off for him, and he's done this, you know, previously at Illinois as well.
Yep.
So like, I mean, I can understand, you know, because we've done it so often in football for Kansas, not wanting to continually turn guys over, but there also comes a, you know, a time where you have to realize, you know, if this is going to work out long-term. And I also wonder, and this was kind of a point that I raised earlier this week, you know, how much of his last two seasons where he went to the Elite Eight on an extremely lucky tournament draw and then won the Big 12 when Kansas had everything go wrong for them. Like, how much of that was luck and how much is he kind of getting the extra benefit of the doubt because of things that honestly probably shouldn't have turned out the way that they did for him?
I mean, you look at the tournament run from 2018, okay, you beat the 16 seed and then you beat Creighton, right? That's nothing impressive. I give him a lot of credit for beating Kentucky. That was not an easy win. Kentucky, that was like a team full of NBA players without Dean Wade. So I do give him credit for that. I really do. But then you go back to last year, man, it's everyone. And not to take anything away from Kansas, because they definitely had it worse than any other team with Azubuike going out. You know, Marcus Garrett was banged up. Legerald Vick left the team. They had more issues than any other team. But the Big 12 was still banged up as a whole. I don't know how much Bruce Weber, it's like falling in love with a girlfriend, okay? This girlfriend is beautiful. She's the best person ever that you think, but then it's just, it is not going to work out. You have too many fights. You have too many issues. It's not going to work out. Bruce Weber has that with Cardi Ejata. He's a great basketball player, but he doesn't care. It's just not going to work out. He does not care about K-State. He's, for some odd reason, thinks he can go play overseas or maybe in the NBA. I mean, good luck with that, but he's got to move on, and he just cannot do it. We saw it with Marcus Foster. He torpedoed the program for 2 or 3 years because he couldn't simply move on from a superstar player. Yeah, he's an amazing player, but you got to let him go and you got to realize when it's just not working out. But going back, the main point, luck, I wouldn't say it was entirely lucky. I mean, I'd give him a lot of credit for the Kentucky win, but the Big 12, you know, run last year, they started off 0-2 and they were on the verge of going 0-3. They were down 22 in the second half to West Virginia last year in Bramlage, and we know what happened with West Virginia last year. So it was looking like it was going to be a season like this. So obviously he got very lucky with Barry Brown. Barry Brown's a great guy, great player. He cared. He wanted to win. He's getting unlucky with Cardi Ejata, Marcus Foster, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's a mixture of luck. I mean, he's a good coach schematically. He can recruit talented players. There's no doubt about that. Managing a team, managing a locker room, that's his biggest issue. I think he definitely benefited from Virginia getting upset in 2018 in the big dance. And then, of course, all the issues going on with Kansas. And if Kansas doesn't get injured last year, there's no doubt about it. They're extending it. Would it be 15, 16 years in a row?
Yeah, they would be working on number 16 right now at that point if they had.
There's no doubt about it. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's one of those and it's also one of those things like – I don't doubt that he can recruit good players, but I'm wondering how well he can recruit to a system. Because we've had this conversation before where, you know, it seems like the way that he's recruiting guys is not with a clear, you know, goal in mind of how he wants his program to run. It's he finds a bunch of talented guys, he recruits them to the best of his ability, and then whoever shows up, he tries to put a team together. He doesn't have a clear system. But I don't want to kind of rehash. I think we've actually talked about that on here already, and I've had that discussion in a few other places. So rather than rehash that, let's look at this actual game itself. Normally when I bring a guest on, I do like to get an actual prediction. So what do you actually see happening this game? How do you see the game actually turning out?
Oh man, like I talked about earlier, I think KU, it's like a game in Allen. They're going to come out. I love how Fran Fraschilla talks about the first round knockout punch. I think K-State's going to be out of this game within 5 minutes. I really do. I mean,
wow.
I know you think that they think that you think that KU can maybe start slow. I don't think KU's going to start slow at all. I think K-State's going to come out. They're going to be toast from the beginning. I mean, you got to remember this is Antonio Dejuan and Montavious if he plays their first time ever being in a big game in Bramlage. I don't think they're standing a chance at all. And this is just, and I would love for them to make it a game. It's a 12:30 game. Maybe they can get lucky and KU could be sleeping, a little sleepwalking for the first half, but I see no issue with KU winning this game. I think it's going to be over from the get-go. I know we don't agree on that, but we can agree that KU is going to cruise to a win.
So how about this? Is it a worse margin or a better margin for Kansas State than Kansas against Oklahoma State in this last game?
Oh, man, what was that score?
I think it was like 31 points. I'm pulling up the score right now because I honestly don't remember. It was 83-58. So we're looking at a 25-point win. So not as bad as I thought it was.
Man, not that I'm a betting man, but I might or may not have had money on Oklahoma State to cover that 14.5-point spread. That was frustrating. But Man, that's a good question. I think that K-State, this is what's been kind of the recurring theme. This happened this weekend on Saturday against Texas, and then in Waco, I don't remember the final score, but K-State made an 11-point game here in Manhattan. That was not an 11-point game at all. It was a blowout for the entire game. I think K-State can make it maybe a 15- or 20-point game at the end of the game, but largest lead for KU is probably going to get up in the 20s or 30s, no doubt about that.
Yeah, and to be honest, you know, Oklahoma State went on a big run after Kansas put the walk-ons in. I believe they went on like an 11-0 run to end the game.
Yeah,
That one could have been a whole lot worse. But I do agree. I think just because this is a rivalry game, you know, that Kansas State is probably going to be able to at least keep it halfway respectable. And when Kansas puts the walk-ons in at the end, you know, I would not be shocked if Kansas State kind of goes on a little spurt there. Just to try to salvage something out of it. But you're right. Like, I'm expecting this to probably be a 20-point win for Kansas, which would be above the line, which would be above what Ken Pom expects. So, I'm not worried at all about the actual outcome of the game. The question is going to be, what are we going to learn? Are we going to see anything from any of the players that kind of really need to work on things? You know, can a guy like Ochai Agbaji actually kind of get mm-hmm. that another good game like he did against Oklahoma State? But that's enough about that game. I do want to talk about the rest of the action because you do cover the entire Big 12. But before we do that, I need to throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back. All right. So, obviously, there's a bunch of other action going on this weekend, and this is the second to last weekend before the end of the conference season. You know, at this point, it is a two-team race between Kansas and Baylor, and honestly, there's a very good chance that, you know, they could end up tied at the top of the conference standings at 17-1, which is absolutely insane to kind of think about. But, you know, there's quite a few games going on this weekend, some of them that might actually be interesting. You know, is there any game specifically that stands out to you as either the most entertaining game or the one that's going to be the closest?
I'm actually really excited to watch Texas and Texas Tech down there in Lubbock, 11 o'clock Central on ESPN. Texas Tech, we know they're a great team, well coached, but Texas, man, that team, I hate to buy into them. I really do, but I kind of am. And I know it's Shaka Smart. I know, I get it. But they've been playing well. I mean, they played really good here in Manhattan. They outcoached us, they outplayed us, you name it. They played well against West Virginia the other night. They beat them at home in Austin. And that was a team essentially with eight players. You know, everyone's banged up and out. I know Jericho Sims, who's pretty much he's their best big man. And honestly, they're only – I know Kai Jones can play the big man. But without Jericho Sims, I thought they would really struggle. No, Shaka Smart steps it up. Texas is fighting, okay? I looked at the bracketology today. Texas isn't even on it. I think once the next one comes out from Joe Lunardi, they'll at least be somewhere on the bubble. I think Texas has a chance to do something. I really do. It's a huge game in Lubbock. Chris Beard, you know what you're going to get from that team, but which Shaka Smart team are you going to get? Are you going to get the one that goes on the road and beats Purdue or beats West Virginia in Austin? I know West Virginia is kind of tanking, so it's not that impressive of a win, but it's still very impressive for Shaka Smart to outcoach Bob Huggins. Or are you going to get the other team that is, you know, what we've seen over the last 5 years with Shaka Smart? I'm excited for this game. That would be definitely the one I'm watching.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I think this has happened the last few years where Texas, you know, has a horrible middle of the season stretch. And then as people start to grumble about whether about the fact that Shaka Smart's job might be on the line, he then reels off a bunch of wins to get back to the middle of the pack in the Big 12 and save his job for another year because his buyout is so huge. And honestly, Texas fans or the Texas administration just doesn't really care that much about basketball. And he's kind of doing that exact same thing again. I have a feeling that they are going to be able to keep this game close. I think Texas Tech is the better team and should be able to win that game. But it's really going to just come down to, you know, how, you know, is their defense going to be able to push Texas out to the corners like they like to do? If Texas can find ways to get to the middle of the floor, then Texas Tech is going to have some issues. I think what's most intriguing about that game is that Texas Tech can't really afford to keep losing like this. You know, they're already, I think, in the latest bracketology down to like a 7 or an 8 seed, maybe even lower than that, actually. Let me see. I was just looking at that just a few minutes ago. And let's see. Oklahoma's at a 12. But I believe, yeah, Texas Tech is down. Is up to a 7 in the latest one. But if they lose that game to Texas, a team that's not even on the bubble right now, officially, you know, I have a feeling they're going to drop down to like the 9-10 range. And they can't afford to keep dropping them, especially, you know, considering that they have, you know, the end of their slate is not really that forgiving for them. You know, they're hosting Baylor to end the year. I'm sorry, hosting Kansas to end the year and playing at Baylor right before that. So they have a killer last week. Like they have, I think they really need this win. You know, it's not going to hurt them too much to lose at Baylor and then lose to Kansas at home if that's the way they finish out the season. But it almost becomes imperative then if they drop 4 straight to end the season that they then go in the Big 12 tournament and win probably a couple games to kind of stop the free fall and make people actually think that they have an opportunity to have a solid, you know, kind of not sweating it out at the end of the year to make it to the NCAA tournament. The other game that I was kind of looking at and I was a little bit intrigued by was the Oklahoma at West Virginia game. Oklahoma already beat West Virginia earlier this year. West Virginia is still projecting to be a 5 or a 6 seed in most bracketology that I can find. But Oklahoma is kind of one of those last 4 teams in, really needs this win, you know, in order for them to really be able to solidify their spot in the NCAA tournament. If they can't get this win, you know, they play home against Texas and then on the road at TCU. So if they drop either of those last 2 games, I think it really puts their chances to make the NCAA tournament as an at-large and in jeopardy unless they can get a huge upset or 2 in the Big 12 tournament. How worried are you about Oklahoma State, you know, and their ability – I'm sorry, not Oklahoma State, Oklahoma and their ability to really solidify themselves in the NCAA tournament if they can't get that win against West Virginia this Saturday?
Yeah, I'm concerned. I mean, I don't think Oklahoma is going to do anything in the big dance. So it's kind of like, why are we even talking about this? Like, they're so vanilla. Maybe they can win a game or 2, but this is a big game. I mean, if you can beat Texas and TCU, fine, but that doesn't do anything to your resume. West Virginia is a really good team at home in Morgantown, and then they leave, they get on the plane, and they're like, who are we? And then they just go out and crap the bed. Huge opportunity, like you said, but it's just, it's a tough game. I think West Virginia is going to win it. I think West Virginia is the better team. Christian Doolittle, I think he's not struggling, but I think I've just been watching him a little bit and I think he can be doing a lot better. Brady Manick can be doing a lot better. They talk about it a lot on ESPN. Austin Reeves has taken a little bit of a step back from, I guess, what the expectations were coming from Wichita State. So Oklahoma, I think they're fine. I said it all season long that they're going to be 8-9 seed. I think that's kind of dipped down a couple seeds, but Oklahoma is just Oklahoma. They're average team in the Big 12, like they always say. And I think they're fine, even if they lose a game to Texas or TCU. The national picture is just college basketball is down this year. I think that they're going to squeak in one way or another. I think if it comes down to it and they're in Kansas City and it's a must-win game against a team like TCU or Iowa State or K-State, Oklahoma State, whoever they may be playing, I think they can squeak out a win. And if they play that 3 seed, then maybe that story definitely changes a lot. But if they're in that 7-10 range, which I guess I don't think they will, I guess I kind of just shot down my own argument. I guess they wouldn't be playing in the play-in game, right? So I guess that game that they do have in the Big 12 tournament could essentially be a play-in game for the Big Dance. They obviously picked up a big win over Texas Tech this week, but still, every game matters. You got to play your best basketball this time of year.
Yeah, I mean, I think really it comes down to if they don't win the game against West Virginia, then they absolutely have to win the next 2 because those two games are going to be killer for their resume, and they really need a big boost, honestly, as it is, because they're already in that last 4 in, you know, playing in the first 4 at this point, according to most bracketology. And so, it's going to be, I think, difficult if they don't get this win against West Virginia, or they don't follow it up with, you know, in the Big 12 tournament after beating Texas and TCU, getting to play either West Virginia or Texas Tech, and getting a win in that kind of game as well. Like, they need another big win against a surefire NCAA tournament team, whether they get it in West Virginia in the regular season or they get it against West Virginia or Texas Tech in the Big 12 tournament. But they've got to get one of those. The question is just going to be, you know, and that's assuming that they don't stumble against TCU or Texas. Let's see. I'm trying to see here. Oklahoma State, Iowa State can be intriguing, I think, if you're not really caring about any of the actual outcomes. It should be a fairly close game. It might be a fairly exciting one because Oklahoma State is coming on, is trying very hard to make a push to get to the NIT, whereas Iowa State, you know, their season's basically over at this point. It's not possible for them to get to the NIT anymore theoretically, if they win five games in a row, which would get them essentially to the Big 12 semifinals and losing in the Big 12 semifinals, then they would technically be 500 on the season and eligible for the NIT. I just don't see that happening at all. Mm-hmm. There's really no way that I think that happens. So Oklahoma State is playing for the postseason. Iowa State might be able to get an invitation to the CBI or something like that if they're interested in that. But, you know, I'm not really expecting too much from Iowa State. So, but do any of the other games kind of jump out to you? Are you interested at all in BC or in TCU and Baylor?
I think Baylor is going to run them out of Fort Worth. Going back to the Iowa State-Oklahoma State game, I'd probably be a little more interested in that game versus that Baylor-TCU game. I know you talk about it a lot on the 10-12 with Phillip. I mean, Oklahoma State, if Isaac Likely doesn't go out, man, that team is dancing. No doubt about it, 100%.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So it's frustrating to see that happen. And then you look at Iowa State, who was without Halliburton, who I personally think that kind of helped him out a little bit. You go, I think it was the first, maybe second game after he goes out, they beat Texas by 30 points in Ames. I don't think it's much of a coincidence. I don't like Halliburton. I know we talked about it a couple months ago on your podcast. I just don't think he's that good. I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me on that because media love to talk about him, but I really don't have much interest in the games. Will I be watching? Yes, because I love watching as much Big 12 as I can get. Like, dude, we only got 3 games left. Like, this is, like, where did conference play go? Time flew by.
Yeah, seriously.
So fast on us. Big 12 tournament should be a lot of fun. But as far as this weekend goes, I'll be on the call here in Manhattan. Can't wait for that game. And then Texas Tech, Texas, as well as I think Oklahoma and West Virginia, like you mentioned, are pretty intriguing. But, boy, I mean, I could try to give you some BS answer for TCU and Baylor as well as Iowa State, Oklahoma State. But I've got nothing. These games, unless you're a fan of those teams, I don't really see why we could convince you to watch.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason you watch the TCU Baylor is to see if TCU can make it interesting and make you kind of wonder what's going on with Baylor.
You're a KU fan.
Well, yeah, but like I don't expect TCU to win that game. Like, the only thing you're kind of hoping for is maybe does it show a chink in the armor for Baylor. But I mean, Baylor is, I think, quite handily the number 2 team right now in the nation, potentially number 1, just depending on kind of how you look at overall resume as opposed to kind of recent success. But back to your point on Halliburton, I don't know that I would say that Halliburton is not a good player. I just don't think he is well equipped to be the guy. And so, you know, when he went down, it required everyone else to kind of step up into roles that they hadn't been playing, that they had been deferring to Halliburton. And the problem with Halliburton is that he can do a lot of things. He can make a lot of other players better, but he can't be the only one that is actually doing it. And when he was the guy, everyone was deferring to him, which was making the entire team worse because nobody was actually kind of taking charge and allowing Halliburton to play off of anyone. I can understand why you don't necessarily think he is necessarily that good, just because he can't do a lot of stuff on his own that you expect from stars a lot of times. But I see him a lot like a guy like Marcus Garrett, where, you know, he makes the offense go. He makes a lot of different things happen. But if you were to put it all on his shoulders, there's no way that he could shoulder that load.
Yeah, you go back to last year. I mean, you had Mariel Shayok, Horton Tucker, Wyler Babb, as well as Wigginton. I mean, those guys are really good, and they all left. And you go back to Marcus Garrett, he's not the best player on Kansas. Is he good? Yeah, he's great. But he's not the superstar. He's not the leader. I don't think Halliburton's a leader, like you said. I mean, he's a great player. He's great. He's not bad at all. I just don't think he's as good as people say. But I definitely agree with you. I mean, he's being forced to do too much. He's much, 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 much better when he has those pieces around him in Ames to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, I would actually say because Marcus Garrett is probably actually the vocal leader of the team, but in terms of on-court performance, he's not the guy that leads everything. Yeah. He's not the guy that really sets the tone in a lot of cases, but he is the guy that facilitates passing. You know, he really is locking down on defense, setting the tone defensively for a lot of players. Halliburton has a lot of those similar skills where he can help to make a lot of other people better. He can help to make things flow smoothly. But if you ask him to put the ball on the floor and go score a bunch, he's not going to be able to do that unless it's in an offensive set that is really kind of designed to get him open and allow him to do that. And so, you know, he definitely has the pieces to be a good player and to help, you know, a team be a lot better. But they've got to have all the rest of the pieces around them. And like you said, Iowa State just doesn't have that this year. All right, well.
Unless Oklahoma leaves them open for three, he's not going to score a bunch. But they do. Yeah.
Yep. All right. So any other final thoughts to share with us before we get out here for the night?
Not really. I noted down that Udoka Azubuike is just going to have – he's going to have a field day, man. He's going to have a lot of fun here in Manhattan. I mean, Mayween, don't even get me started. I'm going to call Mayween. He's just not good. Azubuike is going to go to town down low. And then Levi Stocker is going to check in. It's going to go from bad to worse for K-State down low. I mean, what's the over-under on Big Dope's dunk count? Like 7 or 8, maybe? I mean, he is just going to have a fun day. Other than that, though, I don't know what else there is to say. I mean, thank you so much, as always, for, you know, having me on here. But a good weekend, as always, in the Big 12. As for the showdown here coming up on Saturday, not much else to say other than it's not going to be fun if you're a K-State fan. Obviously, keeping an eye on the court and off the court issues will be something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, so just a little bit of context there. This is only going to be the second time that Udoka Azubuike is going to play at or in Manhattan because he's been injured the other two times. And so, you know, it's a little strange, but if you're looking at the last time that he played, maybe there's a little bit of hope because he only scored 6 points. But obviously, I think that a lot of that has to do with just kind of the fact that he hadn't developed the way that he has to this point. Was playing a whole lot bigger. Like if you're taking something 2 years ago and hoping that that gives you an opportunity, unfortunately, I don't know what to tell you. So, but I agree with you. Doak is probably going to have a very big game. It's going to be a lot of fun if you're a Kansas fan, and hopefully it won't be too painful for any Kansas State fans that are out there. So, Ryan, where can the people find you online?
On Twitter at 10 of 12 podcast. You can stay up to date with everything going on around the league over there. It's no different than the stuff you do with 1012. You know, I may or may not have stolen that name, but I'll be in Kansas City all 4 days. I'll be on the call for K-State, probably just one game, but if they can play more than one game, but I'll still be there all 4 days covering everything going on. So stay up to date with that as well as everything else going on around the Big 12 on Twitter at 10 of 12 podcast. You'll find the links to everything on there.
Yeah, definitely. I know that I try to catch at least your recap episodes every week to kind of do a quick whip around the rest of the conference. So, you know, and it's hard, I think, a lot of times for people to not think that you're biased towards one particular team. But, you know, I've definitely noticed the way that I try to do it is try to be as objective as possible. And I've noticed that you're able to do that a lot of times as well, you know, unless it's a particularly heated topic. So, but, you know, I really appreciate you coming on. I appreciate everybody that's out there listening as well. If you haven't already, please go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million of apps that are out there. You can subscribe to us there so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out. If you can give us a rating and a review as well, 5 stars, nice comments would be absolutely great. But if for whatever reason you're not able to do that, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring the podcast to you to give you all the information that you need. In as entertaining a way as possible. So if you ever have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, you can contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. We'll go ahead and leave it there. Ryan, once again, thank you for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.